Hi there, you're very welcome to the sixth episode of season two of Triton Lake Perform. My name is Connor Smith, founder and CEO of Triton Lake, a global marketplace connecting sophisticated investors with alternative investment opportunities. In 2021, Triton Lake became the title sponsor of the Ireland men's and women's rugby sevens teams. An exciting season has just kicked off with both teams competing in the Dubai and Cape Town World Series events earlier in December. Triton Lake Perform explores the intersections of sport and business, looking at what both worlds can learn from each other and what are the key parts to the puzzle of high performance. So far, season two has seen us speak to great guests such as Kate Kirby, Omar Hassanein, and Greg O'Shea. Today, for the sixth episode of season two, we're delighted to be joined by two former Irish rugby stars. They also happen to be brothers, Dan and Adam Levy. You're both very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Connor.
Thanks, Connor.
Maybe to kick off, let's give our listeners a bit of an idea of where you're both at. You've both obviously retired recently. Give us a sense of where you are today, and then we can rewind a little bit and go back in time.
So as you mentioned, I would have played with the Irish Rugby Sevens team. I was lucky enough to travel to the Olympics in Tokyo in 2021. At that stage, I decided to hang up my boots and head into the working life, where I joined a fintech company where we provided short-term financing to e-commerce companies. That was a pretty fast-paced company, learned a lot very quickly, and I've since moved into corporate finance. Yeah, that's a whistle-stop tour.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Dan Levy. I played 10 years of professional rugby with Leinster and with Ireland. Picked up a very severe injury in 2019 in the run-up to the Japan Rugby World Cup, which eventually caused me to retire. I had 18 months out of the game rehabbing post-injury, and that was kind of where we birthed the idea of doing our whiskey brand, Ohm Whiskey, which is Adam, myself, our dad, and one other business partner, Doug Ledden. So that was kind of where that started. At 18 months out of the game, pretty lonely rehab road. And that was the start of that idea. And then I came back and had two goes of trying to make a comeback properly. Played 7 or 8 games both seasons. Further complication, went in under the knife again, and then basically called it a day 2 years in kind of March, April. That's coming up in the next 3 months. So yeah, that was kind of it. Subsequently, I've started working in an investment manager with third-party distribution for sustainable funds and sustainable investment opportunities as well.
Very good. As I said, maybe we'll go back in time a little bit. And as you think about growing up, Adam, what was the Levy household like? Was it very competitive given where you all ended up, or was it more chill?
I think it was competitive growing up.
Was for me,
yeah. I suppose I was always living in Dan's shadow growing up, especially in school. He made a name for himself in school rugby-wise, and I did look up to him in that sense. We also have a younger sister who played basketball for Ireland underage, so I think it was a pretty sporting family. I'm not sure if we inherited too much from our parents. They're not the sportiest, if they didn't play any sport at all, as far as I know. But yeah, it was good. I suppose we kind of lent on each other and supported each other through school and even through our careers in rugby too. So it was good having people in the same kind of mindset as each other.
And you did play in the same team in school a good few times, right?
Yeah. We would have played Senior Cup with each other in St. Michael's too. So yeah, that was
we
good.
Won as well.
I know, I remember. We know that bit.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah, they were some of the best like rugby memories, playing with Adam. We won the Senior Cup, which at the time was be all and end all together. And at the end of it, it was my mum and dad presented Adam and I with the trophy. We don't know where our sister was.
But playing basketball for Ireland, probably.
Yeah. No, she was present that day. But we actually have a photo up in our house of me and Adam running away with the cup, which was a class picture.
Yeah.
So that was definitely pretty special, pretty unique to be able to play with each other, and to go win it all together was definitely one of my favourite rugby memories.
And when you left school, how come you both ended up playing for different clubs, out of curiosity?
Adam started with UCD.
I actually started with UCD, yeah. I did my first year in college in UCD, and then an opportunity came up to join Connacht Rugby down in Galway, so I would have transferred down to UCG, and I joined Galwegians Rugby Club down there, so big rugby history. Warren Gatland actually coached them for a period. I love my time down in Galway. A lot of good fun. It's a great city. And then I came back to Dublin when I joined the Sevens.
Where did that operate? Where did that come out of? Was it?
I would have played with the academy down in Connacht, and you see a good few players get trials through the academy and then also through club rugby. So my trial came through the academy. I played my first tournament over in Exeter. It was a one-day tournament with 5 games in 1 day, and I think I played every minute of the tournament. So that was definitely a baptism of fire to the sport, and it opened my eyes to how different the two sports are as well, and how demanding sevens can be. But I loved it. Yeah, it was fast-paced. It kind of suited my style of rugby. You could express yourself a lot more than you might be able to on a 15s pitch. So then I got offered to come in full-time, and yeah, I couldn't really say no to that opportunity, coming from playing in the Piss and Rain down in Galway to travelling around the world with the sevens. So yeah, I grabbed it with both hands.
And what was the environment, the high performance setup like in the sevens at that stage? Was the HPC there at that point, or?
No, we were moving around. We would have trained some days in Lansdowne, some days in Donnybrook. We didn't have a base per se, which was difficult, but I suppose, yeah, it was humble beginnings as well. A lot of the lads that are still there playing now would have came from even more humble beginnings, where they would have toured around Eastern Europe playing in the early days tournaments against, I'm not going to say bogey teams, but yeah, they had to start off somewhere, and they built up the ranks year after year. They won every tournament to get up to the top seed, which is the Grand Prix now, traveling around the world and yeah, soaking up the sun, like I said. So a lot of people forget that, how difficult things were at the beginning, the lack of funding, and I suppose, yeah, the lack of support that they would have gotten being a new sport. But now that they're on the circuit and they're an Olympic qualified team, yeah, they're in the best place possible.
Great. Dan, you mentioned obviously the Senior Cup. What other kind of key milestones do you see kind of from there as your career progressed?
First cap for Leinster was, that was kind of a great day out. I think Adam kind of alluded to it. We weren't really raised as like sporty kids, so we weren't fanatic kids down at Leinster games watching every single match. But to get out actually to play in the RDS for the full senior team, played, I think it was Edinburgh at home. I didn't particularly play well when I came on. I only got 10 or 15 minutes, but that was great to actually do that. Yeah, I loved that day. And then after that, I just kind of got more, I think my first European start, it was in the quarterfinals 2017 against Wasps in the Aviva. And I actually had a really good game. I just been pulled in Six Nations camp and was there for every single day of camp. And I got 10 minutes at the end against England when Jamie Heese pulled out in the warm-up. But that was my first proper European start, and that was another really good day. To be followed by a horrible day when we lost Claremont the following or 2 weeks later. But yeah, I mean, there's a couple of like little things like that. And then when we started winning things, obviously, they were really, really special days. I didn't think they were only going to be the only things I ever won, because I was quite young when I kind of burst onto the scene. I was kind of 23, 24, and we had won a Grand Slam. We won Champions Cup, Pro 14, all in the same season, which had never been done before. And then kind of, because we were so young, we kind of thought like, this is the norm here, we're going to get a load more of these. And in fairness to lads, we did win. We won quite a few of the leagues back to back. I think it was like 5 or 6 in a row. But yeah, Champions Cups are elusive, and you can see even with the senior team now how hard they are to get. And again, you know, they did win another Grand Slam. But yeah, so it was kind of, yeah, I, in fairness now, I did really enjoy them when they came around. So it's not like I was like, you know, focused on other things at the time, but definitely thought there'd be a couple more big days.
And then you mentioned, obviously, when you were going through rehab, that was the origin story, for want of a better term, for Owen and so forth. But before that, I guess, Dan, when you were playing and everything, did you think this is what I'm going to be doing for the next 10 or 15 years, or were you thinking about other stuff? Or
yeah, I mean, I was always very proactive away from rugby. So I finished I did a business law degree in UCD and then went straight into Key Capital that year. So I worked on the private debt team under Connor Killeen and Martin Lally and a few guys, and just did a day a week in there. It was pretty hard to do because I was in Irish camp as well. So whenever I could get a day, I'd go in and just try and kind of immerse myself and try and figure out what's actually going on in the corporate world. Also, when I got that, picked up that big injury, I actually went into AerCap, which is aircraft leasing, and did a day a week for a year in there as well. Just because I had so much time and I knew I spent most of the time rehabbing or trying to, you know, make as much progress with the injury as possible. But there's a lot of downtime as well. So I just took every Wednesday in AerCap and definitely learned a lot in there just to kind of get different sector kind of exposures or industry exposures. And then, yeah, we obviously had the OHM ticket along in the background as well. So that was kind of when it came to hanging up the boots. I'm very, very happy that I had those things done because it definitely does stand to you. And even the experience getting into a new work environment, being able to meet people, gel, you know, get up to speed with teams, it's helped quite a bit.
No, yeah, absolutely. You could see, I mean, if you were having to retire against your own terms and didn't have any idea what you were going to do, I guess it would have been even tougher, right?
Yeah, yeah. And look, I think Leinster is an amazing environment, and particularly with the support of the RPI, Rugby Players Ireland. They're awesome. And, you know, it's getting better and better. And they're actually paving the way, you know, globally for kind of rugby player trade unions. So they're all modelling themselves off the RPI because of how good they are. But the kind of supports in terms of not just education, but trying to get work experience, trying to get traineeships, exposure to these kind of companies and stuff is unbelievable. And I recommend kind of anyone who has access to it to definitely avail of it, because it's a unique kind of opportunity. And you can even see the uptake from companies trying to get involved as well, because they know the value in athletes, and they know, you know, particularly rugby players coming from a big team environment where you're good with people and you have to be able to take a lot of criticism and take it the right way. So I think they can see the value as well. So there's a big long list now of companies who want to work with Leinster in Ireland.
I think it's spot on. I mean, and we see it obviously firsthand as well, but having people that have come from that high performance environment that are open to taking direction and criticism, right? So it's not the typical scenario that you see these days outside of that world. So
yeah, 100%. Like, even like going into work and stuff, the first couple of times, like, I'd obviously been quite institutionalized and to hearing, you know, if the coach is giving out to you, or, you know, if he tells you to do something, you do it. And then going into the work environment and people just not doing it, it was just kind of alien to me. Like, if you get a direction, do this. And then, like, people still haven't done it, like, a week later, I just didn't really get, like, even if it was a small kind of task, but it was just that kind of, like, discipline. And it was just funny, like, you know, if that was in Leinster or someone, you'd get, you know, you get shouted at about some, or you'd get in trouble, basically, about it. And it was kind of more, it was player-led as well. Like, no one wants
You don't take it personally as well, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's just like people having to be constantly reminded about stuff. It's just kind of a bit, it was just a bit like, why aren't they doing this, you know? Yeah. But again, it's, that's kind of, I think that's why people like athletes who are self-driven. They want to be the best at what they want to do. And if they have techniques that they can bring from their sporting background where they want to grow, or, you know, they don't look at, like, giving out as a bad thing. They look at it as a positive thing and like a learning experience. Then they're invaluable to a workplace, and they're like, they're an ideal employee, someone who wants to learn and wants to grow and wants to help and be the best. So yeah, absolutely.
And Adam, before you transitioned into being one of these ideal employees, obviously you had a decent journey there, in terms of going to Tokyo. Okay, it wasn't without crowds and everything else, yeah. But had you decided before, I guess, you got on the plane to Tokyo that was going to be the last dance, for want of a better word?
Yeah, I had actually. I think, like Dan mentioned, RPI were pretty good for supporting us all the way through our careers. They really encourage everyone to have something going on in the background, whether it's work experience or a degree or a master's. So I was lucky enough to get my master's over the course of COVID while I was training. Did a master's in finance up in UCD Smurfit. So yeah, I'd kind of set my sights on Tokyo and moving into the working life after that. I think for me, Tokyo was kind of the pinnacle, and we'd worked towards that for the last 4 or 5 years before that.
To get there was amazing.
Yeah. Qualifying in Monaco was probably one of the best days of my life. Mind it was behind closed doors, same as Tokyo, But for some of the family to get over and see that was a really special moment. So, yeah, I thought another four-year cycle before another Olympics seemed like a long, long way away.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think I was looking at kicking on in my career then and, yeah, I suppose pivoting into a different role and a new chapter. So,
yeah. And, you know, retiring early has probably given you extra time to focus on that as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I think I was lucky. I was one of the few players that got to retire on my own terms. It's probably not usual you see someone retiring as young as I did. Obviously, Daniel's case was a different story, but I was lucky in that sense. And I was lucky that I had the support prior to retiring in terms of my degree and my master's and everything, which was great.
Yeah.
So it made it a little bit more seamless, the transition.
No, absolutely. And I mean, we touched earlier on, obviously you had your times on the pitch together. Did you ever think you'd end up doing something together in a work perspective as well? Had you talked about those kind of things when you were younger, I guess?
Not really, but...
Not exactly, yeah. I think it kind of fell into our lap, Dan's retirement, obviously, and we'd played with the idea of opening up a little micro distillery down on our family farm down
in Mullingar. Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, so the family farm has been in our family for 6 or 7 generations, and we kind of played with the idea of opening up a little micro distillery, like I said, and then Dan's injury came along and we were approached by our business partner about a special release of whiskey, and the two kind of worlds combined, and this was 2.5-3 years later and we're on to our third release of whiskey now. So yeah, they're selling like hotcakes at the moment, which is it's a good problem to have. We've had huge support from friends and family, but then also from the rugby network. And
Did a release last week, right? That was the third release of Ohm Whiskey?
Third release, yeah.
How have those releases gone so far?
Yeah, really well. So we did our first release in May of last year, right before the Champions Cup final each week, which we won't talk about. And yeah, we sold the whole thing out in under 24 hours. So we had 1,100 bottles. We sell all online on ohmwhiskey.com, and yeah, we were delighted. It was a complete leap of faith in one sense. We had all the stock ready to go. We knew we were going live at 10 a.m. on the Thursday, and you know, we were kind of thinking like a little bit nervous about, you know, what's going to happen here. And as soon as it went live, you know, we had like a couple of hundred bottles sold in the first 15 minutes or something, so it was amazing. Yeah, we sold the first one out, and then we kind of break it up for a couple of months, and then we came back with our second release. So we do limited batch releases, all 7-year-old single malts with different cask finishes on it. So the first one was a Madeira cask, the second one was a Pinot cask, slightly stronger, slightly less sweet than the first one, and we sold that one out in 5.5 hours. So the momentum is really, really getting there. I think the word kind of got out that we're, you know, releasing a really cool, slick, well-marketed, like deadly packaging, but also very, very good liquid, which is the kind of the main thing. Which is the main thing in the whiskey game. And then we sold out the next one in like close to 5 hours as well, which is, you know, really, really, really great. So we've done a slightly bigger release for this one. Sales been really, really good. We still have a bit of stock left on ohmwhiskey.com. And this is a cognac cask finish as well. So almost got like, this is like almost like a bit of spice. So it's kind of like a Christmassy kind of blend, which is great. So yeah, we just said pop on here and, you know, chat away about it. But it's going really, really well. And we've got some amazing plans now coming into the new year with some really cool releases. But also we've got a cool kind of like marketing kind of plan. And we've got some cool kind of things in the pipeline coming for late January, yeah, February, yeah, as well.
In terms of, as you think about business, and you know, we touched on, I guess, the differences between people that haven't come out of the high performance background, but have you brought yourselves beyond the kind of core attributes that we talked about in terms of taking direction and everything else? Are there high performance learnings that you had in the sporting world that you've tried to take into the business world, even with OHM, right? So
yeah,
whether it's with other jobs or OHM, or have those kind of things fed through?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think, you know, in business things never go the way you want, and there's always problems or things. And I definitely think the resilience comes across, as in things aren't always perfect, a delivery comes late, something happens, and I think the ability to kind of take a step back, rationalize things and get a problem solved, like, comes through really quickly. Like, as in, whenever Adam and I have a problem or anything like that, we usually have it sorted or have some kind of plan ready very quickly. So I think that's probably one thing. I think another thing is, you know, you guess, well, through sport, I definitely found I had really good networks. So you just meet a lot of people. You get, you know, it's a very social, you know, even with the teams, there's 23 odd on a team plus the squads. So you're probably chatting to 60 or 70 people at least a day, just in training, physios, you know, nutritionists, everything, the academy, all bopping around. So you actually, you get really good with people and building relationships and talking to people and nurturing that. And then you get a really good network off the back of it. So I think definitely bringing that into business, the ability to go out and network and chat to people and build a relationship like that is huge, because like business is relationships at the end of the day. It's, you know, you buy from your friends, and that's what I always say. That even my job now, it's all about connecting with people, and like no one likes a salesperson who just fires an email, and like you're never going to buy that. But if you can actually meet people and build relationships, and it goes a long way. So I think with, you know, where we are with Ohm now, it's kind of leveraging those relationships and trying to get as much traction and support on it as possible. And yeah, I think that's definitely a big transferable. Yeah, they'd probably be resilience and ability to network and relationships, probably the two, I'd think. If Adam,
yeah,
might
no,
have
I'd agree. Yeah, definitely being adaptable is a big thing. So that transferred across from the sevens and being able to do it at a fast pace as well. And then, yeah, the collaboration side too. But then also, I'd probably say attention to detail. A lot of the cases, doing your homework. You know, like our whiskey business wasn't built in a day, and there was a few long, hard years where we grafted out and put, you know, structures in place. And the same applies for sport as well. Like, you're going to do your homework on the team you're playing on the weekend. So it's nearly getting the step ahead and having an advantage before you even step foot on the pitch. So
yeah, in terms of, obviously, Dan, you had your own struggles in terms of the injury and the rehab and everything. Adam, was there any particular challenges or struggles that you faced as you, I guess, you're on a one minute you're on a plane home from Tokyo, right? Yeah. And then you're not training anymore. I mean, I know we talked about this before, and you were saying you missed like the seeing the lads and all of that kind of thing. Were they harder, or was what was the transition to working full time like?
I suppose I was lucky that I went straight into work after Tokyo. I think the lads kind of looked at me like I was mad and that I didn't take any time off. And I went straight into a fast-paced job, which was great. Unfortunately, that role came to a sudden halt, where there was mass layoffs made. And I was unfortunately part of that group where nearly half of the workforce was let go. So yeah, that was a bit of a shock to the system. And I kind of had to step back and reevaluate things and think about what I was going to do next. So yeah, again, like the collaborative thing Dan was speaking about there, and having a network to lean on, RPI for one, and then meeting with people that I knew and kind of coming up with an idea of where I was going to take my next step. So yeah, there was a readjustment period there. But yeah, again, Dan's mention of being adaptable and then, you know, being resilient too, that definitely shone through, and I suppose in a tougher time. So I've since found my feet, and I'm working in corporate finance now, which I'm loving. So I think all these things kind of work out. But in terms of missing playing with the lads on the pitch, I definitely do that. I've joined Bechtel Rugby since, just for the social side of things.
I'm his coach.
And the pints, yeah.
I'm actually his coach.
Yeah.
Legitimately, I'm
yeah,
his coach.
I don't listen to him, though. Yeah.
But I thought that was one of the learnings you took, was that you did listen to leadership.
Yeah. Well.
No, Dan.
Yeah. Selective leadership, yeah. But yeah, Bechtel's been great. It's good to be involved with playing with a few friends from school as well. But yeah, it's something that you don't realise you miss until it's gone, the social side of things. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to have it back in my life now.
I didn't really miss the social side when I retired. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was because I wasn't really with the group as much for a long time before I retired. So I did a lot of rehab by myself and stuff. I kind of weaned myself out. So when it was obviously, you know, tough announce to get to the group and stuff like that. But you hear a lot of people say when they leave the sporting kind of group or the
they feel like extended squad, they
leave.
Right?
Yeah. I just wasn't really that.
No. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
The lone wolf.
But.
As we wrap up, I guess we've touched on some of the skills and attributes, right? Is there, if we were to try and grab one piece of advice from each of you, as for someone that's looking to establish themselves and, you know, carry that high performance piece with it, what would that be? I mean, we've touched on obviously the importance of the network and relationships and everything else, but if you were to sit down with someone and give them one nugget, what would it be?
So it was kind of like a flicking mindset that I had that I thought was unbelievable advice. It was Ian Madigan gave it to me. So when I was a young player, I thought I was probably deserving to be starting in quite a few games, and I just wasn't getting picked. And I used to like go up to the coach's office and kind of be like, why am I not getting picked? I'm better than your man and blah, blah, blah. He was just like, look, we're not going with you. And it was kind of like a negative way, kind of throw the like toys out the pram, that kind of like attitude about it. It was kind of like, not victim mentality, but just being like, he's, you know, coaches, whatever, an idiot, and he's not picking me, blah, blah, blah. And be in a bad mood and huff about it. And, you know, you just get a negative relationship with them then. It's actually the worst thing you can do. And Madigan kind of copped that I should be playing and kind of said, he said, the best way to do it is actually completely like flip it. Instead of going in with the kind of destructive redhead mindset, go in and say, all right, well, listen, I respect your decision. I want to get into the starting team here and I want to work with you. What do you need me to do, or how can I get to the starting team? And it completely flicks the negative kind of, you know, hostile, kind of hostile thing to saying, okay, I respect your decision. I understand you're not going to go with me that this week. Fine. What are the things that are holding me back? How am I not able, like, what are your reservations around me? I'm going to work on them. Give me 6 weeks. I'll do, you know, if it's lineouts, if it's passing, whatever it is, for just in a rugby context, I'd say, how can I work on them? Get a plan in place, pull some of the other coaches in and say, all right, this is why I'm not in the team. I want to show them that I'm working on this. And then in 6 weeks' time, I can go back and say, I'm ready to do this now. What, like, what's holding me back now? And I'm waiting for my opportunity. It completely turns the coach's mindset to go, okay, well, this guy, he's not just shouting me down here. He actually wants to get better. He wants an opportunity. He's driven. He's motivated. He's doing all the things I was worried about him. There's evidence here that he's actually got them sorted. So that was, I think that was the best piece of advice I've ever got. If you look at how long a season is and you mightn't play one game, and it's very easy to kind of get worked up and say, why am I playing, blah, blah, blah. But like, the end of the day, there's rotation and everything as well. So anytime you didn't play, it was like an opportunity to do an extra week of S&C or get ahead on something else or work on a skill that you wouldn't have had if you're playing. So I always flicked it into a positive thing. Coaches loved us. And like now, even in the workplace as well, like do it to your employer. Like say, you know, if there's a promotion you didn't get or someone else got, instead of, you know, not talking to your, you know, I can see it all the time with people like, being in a huff with their employers, like that's not going to get you a promotion. That's going, if anything, it's going to work against you. So like sit down and say, why is this person picked ahead of me? Not in a, you know, not in a questioning kind of aggressive manner, but saying, I want to progress and I want to evolve. What do you need to see from me? And can we put a plan together and blah, blah, blah. And I think that was definitely the best piece of advice I ever had. Yeah.
Very good. Adam, no pressure.
No pressure, yeah. Tough act to follow. I would say probably knowing your strengths is a big thing. I found that on the sevens pitch, definitely kind of knowing, I can't remember who said it to me, but it could have been Anthony Eddy. He said, knowing your X factor, knowing where your strengths lie, and I suppose not ignoring them as well when you're working on things on and off the pitch. So giving attention to them when you're doing your work-ons. But I suppose the same applies to a workforce as well and the office. I suppose playing up your strengths and I suppose, yeah, giving the best account to yourself. There isn't any point in, I suppose, ignoring the things that you should be working on, but yeah, just knowing where your strengths lie and I suppose putting that best foot forward.
Right, makes sense. Dan and Adam, thanks for joining us today. It's great to chat to you both. Best of luck with Ome Whiskey and look forward to keeping in touch with that and your multiple next chapters that you have underway.
Yep, thanks very much. Available on omewhiskey.com.
That's all for this episode of Triton Lake Perform. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back very soon with the final episode of the season. Stay tuned.